Hello, everybody. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley. Love, lust, and laughter, and don't we all need more of that? Carl Frankel is one of my most favorite guests. He was on last April. Well, that was only last month, actually. And we talked about role plays and fantasies. He has many wonderful chapters in his book, Secrets of the Sex Masters. Welcome once again to the program, Carl Frankel.
Hi, Diana. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about touch, and touch is something essential, isn't it? Touch can communicate multiple emotions, such as joy, love, gratitude, and sympathy. And you...
It can...
Yes, go ahead.
Absolutely, and it can be hostility and violence. It's a whole language. It's a whole language that covers the gamut of emotional communications.
Yeah, whole language. And we're going to focus on the more loving aspects of touch. And you did this chapter with Joseph Kramer, who's rather famous. Could you tell us a little bit about his influence on the whole field of touch?
Oh, sure. Joe Kramer is a very, very interesting man. He's based in the Bay Area, and he's been working with people around touch for decades now. He's the founder of something called Sexological Bodywork. California is the only state in the country that licenses people to do genital touch and healing massage. And
yes,
Joe is responsible for that. He's also lately been working with gay people around self-pleasuring and pornography. So he's trying to get people to not just zone out when they watch porn, but to really be present to the experience of the pleasure that they're giving themselves. So he's really been, it's sort of a bad joke, but a bad wordplay, but he's been a seminal figure in the world of touch and erotic touch for many, many years. And he's a very thoughtful man with a very interesting approach to touch.
His website is, it's a combination of other people too, but it's eroticmassage.com. And yes, you mentioned in your book that this last thing you said, one of his current focuses is porn yoga for porn lovers.
Porn yoga. Who knew, right?
I know it.
Porn yoga, it's like,
yeah,
that's like a Zen koan right there. It's like porn yoga. Let me think about that.
Porn yoga, you write here, involves pleasurable, intimate, and transformative practices that are done while mindfully masturbating to pornography. And the key word there is mindfully. Isn't that true?
Absolutely, Joe. Yeah. And this, so I should step back a bit. This book that I'm responsible for, called Secrets of the Sex Masters,
mm-hmm,
I wrote the chapters. Sometimes I ghost wrote them, sometimes I wrote them with, but they were all involved the expertise of these sex masters that I interviewed. And so this is Joe's chapter that I co-wrote with him, but based it, it's 90% his material. And Joe, when it comes to touch, and this is Joe's view, there are other people with other approaches, but Joe's approach is all around what is called mindfulness. And mindfulness is a term of art in the world of meditation. It's what we're supposed to be, sort of be present to the moment without getting all caught up in the stories we create inside our head, inside the feelings that flow through us, but just being present to what's happening in a kind of witnessing kind of way. That's what mindfulness is. And for Joe, that's the first step to touching skillfully, staying present. And he has two magic words that he uses for this. One is attention, and the second is intention. Be present to what's happening and know why you're trying to touch, why you're touching, and be present to that purpose.
Can you expand on that? I see in your book you've got this Vipassana meditation. It's an Indian meditation. And
right.
And so you write, can you keep your attention on the sensations of hand caressing skin? And most people's attention, and this is so true, wanders because they're bored or anxious. And
totally. And
yes. Go Go ahead.
There's a word called triggered. You know, we get triggered, and it's sort of like a hip word now. But
right.
Somebody does something that upsets me, and I go into this little cloud of stories, assumptions, reactions, this whole sort of like explosion of fireworks takes place inside my head. And
mm-hmm.
if I'm dealing with explosions of fireworks inside my head, it's really hard to touch skillfully because all my energy is going into what's going on inside my head. So Vipassana mm-hmm. meditation is a particular school of meditation that goes back thousands of years, and basically it's a practice that involves observing what goes on in your mind, what passes through your mind, in a detached way. And the metaphor that one often hears is it's just every thought is a piece of laundry. Take it outside and hang it up on the hook. It might be a thought about being madly in love. It might be a thought about losing a job. It might be a thought about dying. It might be a thought about what you're going to eat for breakfast. Doesn't matter. Hang it up on and just come back and watch your breath, center to your breath, and let the world of your thoughts pass by without judgment. That's the notion.
That's the notion, and it is extremely difficult for people to do it, for many people to do it.
It's the hardest thing, you know. It's easier
yeah.
to distract ourselves. I love to play tennis, so I can really get into playing tennis, and I want to get better at tennis, and I work on my serve, and I work on my volley, and it's totally consuming. But it's so much easier than just being still and being present to what's going on in my brain and getting out of the loop of judgment. Spiritual work is really not easy. That's the bottom line. And what's really interesting about Joe's work is he's connecting what is ultimately a spiritual practice with an erotic practice, which is touch. Now, touch is many things. It's not only erotic, as we've said. It can communicate the whole gamut of emotions. But since this is a show about sex, it also can be a way to communicate erotically. And Joe's point is all the action, all the presence, not all, a lot of the action, a lot of the presence, a lot of the learning is about what goes on inside your head. If you're off in, you know, Wyoming when your body's in Los Angeles, you're not going to touch skillfully.
I appreciate your way with words and the way you write. It's brilliant.
Well, thank you,
Carl.
Diana.
You really are. You're such a smart guy, and you have such amazing EQ too.
Thank you.
And so does your life partner, Sherry Winston, and she's been on this program. And you wrote Succulent Sex Craft together, and that book has made such a difference, especially for some of my younger male clients who, in this area, Seattle, we have a lot of high-tech guys who lack, I'm generalizing a little bit, but they lack certain social skills, and they want to get better about being lovers and being more present and getting and tapping into their own intuition and touching skills. So that book with Sherry's wonderful illustrations really helps a lot, and I've gotten that feedback. In fact, one recent young man told me that when he ordered it, he's on Prime, Amazon, which means, you know, I think you spend $100 a year and you get it sent to you in a day. That
right.
book, Succulent Sex Craft, was sent free with his Prime. I hope Sherry gets some cut in that. You
well,
and Sherry.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why I haven't been able to pay the mortgage. Good to know.
Amazon is so huge.
But seriously, people.
Yeah.
Amazon. You don't get the book free, but they do free shipping. It's great. It's just great.
Yeah, it
so,
is.
Yeah, and, you know, Sherry, it's first of all, it's lovely that you said it. What I take note of is that it's really wonderful when young people, especially young men, say, I want to get better at this. Because
mm-hmm.
there's so much bad modeling about how to be a good lover now. Guys watch porn, and if you want to know how to not be a good lover, watch a lot of porn, because that'll
exactly.
tell you what not to do. But most young men don't realize it. They think that this is how it's supposed to be. A lot of young women do, too. So if a person has this sort of imagination to go, well, maybe this isn't really the best guy for me, that's the first step, and that's really an essential first step for anybody, because We don't learn how to be intimate in this culture. In fact, we're trained in how not to be.
Yeah, and doesn't how not to be, and of course, porn is a terrible teacher, and there's some evidence that a chronic viewing of it can actually alter the brain, especially in young men. But I did talk about that on a program about a month ago, because it was the cover story in Time magazine. So let's stay with touch today, and
sure.
I think it's interesting that cultures can determine how we touch. That warm climates tend to produce cultures that are more liberal about touching than colder regions. And here we need to think about Greeks versus Germans, or Southern hospitality versus New England stoicism.
It has to do with
the availability of the skin. You know, if there's more skin available, the touch can be felt. The effect of sunlight on mood. People in the Pacific Northwest often need to take a lot of vitamin D, because except now that summer's starting, we don't get enough sunlight. And even migratory patterns. I think this is fascinating, that our ancestor tended to migrate to the same climate zone that they came from. So you have upper Midwest is heavily German and Scandinavian, while Spaniards and Italians went to Mexico and Brazil. And so that influences the brand of touch, doesn't it?
It's really interesting. I mean, the sort of the stereotype, and sometimes stereotypes have some merit to them, that, you know, Latin cultures are much more emotional and passionate and touch-oriented, and Nordic cultures are colder and more reserved and more withdrawn. I knew a psychologist, I always remember this, in my 20s, and I sort of asked him about, I was living in Germany, and he was German. Mm. I asked him, what about the German culture and the Second World War? I was asking, trying to make sense of this, and what he said was, there are two reasons for why the German culture and personality developed as it did. The first was the weather. It's always gray there, and it's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was that they were enslaved peoples for thousands and thousands of years. One dominator culture versus another came in and knocked the hell out of the Germans and enslaved them. So they have a culture of slavery and a culture of depression. And that's not what we associate with Southern Italian cultures, for example, right?
That's right.
At least the perception is they're ebullient, they're outgoing, they love pleasure, they love to touch. But, of course, the exception of Catholicism, which does everything it can to suppress our capacity and potential for pleasure.
Yes, I must say that over the 30-plus years I've been doing this work, that the Catholic clients either lapsed, because some of those messages stick, or current practicing Catholics, it does a number on their sexuality very often. I mean, when they're teenagers, they're told they'll go to hell if they masturbate. When I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center before I moved to Seattle almost 8 years ago, one of my Catholic patients in that setting, it was called patient, the only way she could reach orgasm was to lie on her stomach on the carpet and rock. And
right.
It was look, ma, no hands, but it was not partner compatible, you know?
So, yes, it's really very sad, and it's quite a mystery to me. So I don't really understand that. I don't have an explanation. It was a very interesting thing you said about North and South and touch patterns and touch cultures. The only thing I would add to that is that touch is not only lovely, but it is absolutely essential to life. You know, the studies of babies who are deprived of touch don't grow the same way. They grow up stunted and dwarfed emotionally, mentally, and physically. So we are animals, and animals are wired for touch and connection through touch. It is part of who we are as mammals. And unfortunately, our culture, because it's kind of paranoid about sex, puts up all these strictures that say, basically, thou shalt not touch. And the consequences, the social and emotional consequences of this are devastating. The alternative is not an ongoing orgy. Nobody has the energy for that or the desire, but there is kind of a middle ground, right? Where people can, and there are people who work in that territory, like there's this whole movement called cuddle parties where people get together and touch each other. It's not erotic touching.
Right.
It's not usually erotic touching. It's cuddly touching. But it still kind of is taboo in a sense that because it says if friends touch friends, it doesn't mean it's a first step to being a friend with benefits. And if you cuddle as a guy with another guy, doesn't even mean you're gay. It just means you're cuddling. So
you're cuddling and releasing oxytocin in the process,
Oxytocin. Look, I have a beloved cat who's in my office with me right now, whose name is Bodhi Katsa. And Bodhi comes up to me every day and insists on his daily dose of oxytocin because when cats and people touch each other, they are generating oxytocin for each other. That's why I love to hold my cat, because he gives me love vibrations that are hormonal, actually, right? So this stuff is not just about pleasure, ultimately. It's about health. People who touch, people who are in community and beyond community, people who touch each other, live longer, healthier lives. So this is important stuff, and it's the last thing from frivolous.
Yeah. Just to circle back a little bit to religious taboos, there are some people that have been researching this. One person in particular, a guy named Anderson, he noted that atheists and agnostics touch more than religious types. And probably because religions often teach that some kinds of touch are inappropriate or sinful. And so, but tolerance for touch isn't set in stone. If a person spends time in a different culture or even with touchy-feely friends, the attitude toward touch can change and does often.
It's a fabulous thing, and the strictures we have about touch are so culturally defined. I grew up, Diana, in a very liberal Jewish intellectual household. My dad was a professor of philosophy. They were pretty healthy about sex and the body and all that. So if anybody should have missed all the cultural stuff, it probably would have been me. I remember being 13 or 14 years old and being in Greece because my dad traveled on grants and stuff like that. And I was befriended by a 15-year-old Greek boy who tried to hold my hand when we were walking. Freaked out. I freaked out totally. I didn't know why he was doing it. I didn't know what he wanted. I didn't know if he was. And remember, this is like many, many moons ago.
I didn't know
if it might mean, oh, my God, he was a homosexual, which was almost inconceivable to me at the age of 14 from that culture. I didn't know what was going on, and it scared the bejesus out of me. So even like from a progressive, sex-positive environment, these messages you get are really deep.
Oh, yes. And so how did that story end back when you were 14 and in Greece?
I never saw him again. I mean, I just it was like today is Tuesday, it's Athens, tomorrow it's Wednesday, we're in the Peloponnesus, so we were gone. It was a 1 minute handhold thing.
Yes.
it wasn't a relationship. So,
comparing the Catholics in my practice to the Jews in my practice over the years, the Jews are way more open and about sexuality, and even the men about having affairs, and they'll often have affairs if their Jewish wife is not responding sexually. And they don't seem to have the guilt about it
I've never quite figured out the sort of the shades of Jewish and Catholic guilt, because Jews are really good at guilt, right? I mean, that's one of our specialties, right? And Catholics are really good at guilt. But they share different words because they've got a different quality to them, right?
Yeah.
So, we're not guilty. We Jews aren't really guilty about sex were just guilty about existing, right?
God. Oh.
Yet we're also
people
the
really
people
overthink things so and like, overanalyze things way too much. And
yeah, it's
in general,
it's really yep. true. So anyway, the whole let's come back to touch a bit because
yes, of course.
You know, Joe Kramer's approach to touch is really interesting, and we all analyze stuff. So Joe has a model for touch, and he basically says we touch for three reasons. Mm-hmm. We touch for sensation, which mm-hmm. would include just feel good, and it could be erotic sensation, or it could be just it feels good,
mm-hmm.
right? We touch to connect. Mm-hmm. A great example is a hug. Something terrible has happened, so we hug somebody we care about.
Mm-hmm.
That's to connect and to console. And the third one is really interesting, and we connect and we touch in the mode of role-playing, which was mm-hmm. really, it came out of nowhere when he said this to me, but it made sense. Joe is a massage therapist, and he said that his touch skills came from 10,000 hours of doing touch in the role of a massage therapist. And he points out we're always in a role, no matter what we're doing, even if the role is we're going to be lovers now and intimate, the role is we're being intimate lovers, and that's very different than if you're a massage therapist where there's certain things you can do and can't do and the rules of play. So there are these, he has these three models which are really useful, and his point is you can have hybrids. You can have a role that's also to connect. You can have a kinky relationship where you're a top, but you're also doing mm-hmm. it to connect with the bottom. So it's not one or the other. But if you're not clear about why you're doing it and what your purpose is, what your intention is, there might be problems because some person might be doing it for a role play. I'm a massage therapist. And the other person is doing it because they want to connect. And there's only certain kinds of connecting that are allowed to happen in that professional relationship. So you got to be really clear on what you're doing and why before you get into it, which says that touch isn't only about touch. It's about the framing inside which that touch encounter happens. And it's really important to be clear about your framework if it's going to work for you.
And you and Sherry have some other types of touch that overlap with Joe Kramer's. Can you
Absolutely.
Elaborate on that?
Sure.
Overlap
to,
and extend it a little bit.
Sure. And I'm more familiar with this one because I've been living with Sherry for 10 years and helping her write her books and mm-hmm. talking about this and like that. So she basically has a model, and these are, you know, there's this famous expression, the map is not the territory. Touch is touch. Everybody can slice it, dice it. If you asked me to come up with my model, I'd probably come up with something different. And I think this one is really useful. So Sherry's model has four types of touch. And the first one is nurturing. So nurturing touch is I'm hugging you because you feel bad or because you need consoling or something or you're celebrating. I mean, it's sort of a parent-child relationship sort of thing. You're stroking your partner's hair. You're whispering in their ear. You're hugging them and consoling them. That's nurturing touch.
Yeah.
There's therapeutic touch, which mm-hmm. Which Joe would think of as a type of role-playing touch. I'm going to massage you, Sherry, because you have a spasm in your back, and I'd like to release that spasm. That's
mm-hmm.
therapeutic
mm-hmm.
touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's what she calls sensual touch, which is touching for pleasure, but it's
sensual
not necessarily
touch,
touching
yeah.
sensual touch. But
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily touching for erotic arousal. And then the fourth touch type of touch is erotic touch,
mm-hmm.
and that's about making a person climb the sending a person up the arousal ladder. That's
mm-hmm.
it. Now there's a progression here, right? Because
mm-hmm.
it's not just one or the other, and it's also important to follow the sequencing because, just to take an example, if I'm doing nurturing touch and
mm-hmm.
I'm holding your head and I'm stroking you and then all of a sudden I put my finger on your crotch, it's going to feel weird and wrong because I'm in the parent mode, I'm in the parent role, and all of a sudden I'm being sexual. So you've really got to be careful about your boundaries here.
Yeah.
You'll do a whole lot better if you go from sensation touch, from sensual touch to erotic touch, which makes a lot more sense. Sensual touch is sort of foreplay for erotic touch.
Right.
Now,
right.
In a lot of relationships, and I think in I believe with a lot of women, it's a great sequence to go from therapeutic touch. I'm stressed. It's been a hard day. I just want to, like, you know, feel better. So go from a therapeutic massage to a sensual touch to erotic touch. That's a progression that makes an awful lot of sense and that really works for a lot of people.
So many of my clients, and I'll give them caressing exercises, sensate focus exercises, where intercourse isn't even allowed for the first couple of weeks. But they need to move. Many of my clients need to move beyond tactile taboos and restrictive, I think, you know, goal-focused sexual touch that goes immediately to the genitals doesn't work, especially for a lot of women. It's just, it's too quick because sensual
I'm sorry, go ahead, Diana.
No, you, yes, tell me.
I learned that lesson the hard way. I mean, I'm not a young man, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I'm in my 60s, and I spent most of my life thinking that female arousal kind of worked like male arousal, which meant grab the crotch and go to work and that's good because I like it when you do it, so you must like it when I do it. It doesn't work that way.
No.
And boy, did I learn the hard way that it's all about the timing and it's all about the sequencing of the approach. So it's not only how you touch, and you want to touch with attention and intention, with high
exactly.
awareness, but
exactly.
it's also what you do and when.
Yeah.
Sherry is still training me, what with my being a dog and all, to sort of like take my damn time and not just go for the juicy parts early. And the juicy parts are, well, we all know what the juicy parts are.
Yeah, we all
know. They include the breasts as well as right. We've sort of, I think we got that down. So
yeah.
And there's a whole timing thing about when it's right. And this is why communication is so important too, because it really helps. I mean, a lot of guys are waiting for cues or listening for cues or watching for cues. So, you know, and there's sort of this notion that if you have to say it, you're not doing it right because you should know automatically. You should just know. And we can talk about when you know and how you know. But until you get into this sort of transcendent groove, it really helps to say, you know, if it's time to touch the breasts, there's a way to communicate. Okay, you can go there now. And I think men who do premature approaching to the hills and crevices do so at their peril.
Yes. I say to my couples, sensual discovery is the goal, and sensuality is characterized by full absorption in the moment-to-moment experience of the senses. And that's what you started out explaining with this program.
Totally.
And of course, early experiences of touch that are abundant and loving, if we have them, I got them as a child with secure attachment, and I gave them to my daughter and son, and it is such a pleasure to watch my daughter with my grandsons because it carries on.
It's a wonderful thing.
So affectionate
thing,
with her boys.
And there's so much guilt and shame and just plain ignorance about how to deal with matters sexually with one's children. And I'm not just talking about the birds and bees conversation.
No.
I'm talking about
yeah.
how do you touch their genitals when you're bathing them when they're an infant.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of messages do you deliver they're so impressionable and they just soak all kinds of information in at that point. What kind of messages are you giving them about whether their genitals are worthy and desirable or ugly, dirty, and icky, right? I mean, there are all kinds of sort of things that get embedded and transmitted. And similarly, if it's not a family that believes in touch, you grow up alienated from touch. If you're a family, if you didn't get the breast as an infant, that can have devastating emotional, and a lot of people in our culture didn't, really serious emotional and physical consequences. You know, breast milk is amazingly healthy. There ain't nothing like it.
That's
right. Something else I've learned from Sherry. So this is another, you know, it's a matter of, like, celebrating the body and being okay with it. And that's, so touch skills are not only around the techniques of touch, which are they, which, and they, there are techniques, and they matter. It also comes down to your attitude about your right to experience pleasure and to enjoy your body.
You know, in talking to my clients, and I'm just aware, sadly, that people don't even remember being touched as children.
It's so sad.
I
don't recall being touched, honestly. I'm lucky because I came out in a pretty healthy place, but I totally, it's a terribly sad thing.
Yes. It is. I think those of us who were touched and had that secure attachment versus anxious or avoidant attachment are way ahead. Yep. Now, I want to share a study that I think is fascinating, and it has to do with the NBA. And so,
the NBA, like the basketball NBA?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think you'll like this, Carl. If you've just tuned in, this is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm talking to Carl Frankel. He has co-written and edited a wonderful book. I recommend you get it, Secrets of the Sex Masters. So this psychologist named Michael Krauss, he is at the University of Illinois, and he tracked physical contact between teammates during NBA games. So these were like chest bumps and high fives and back slaps, right? And the study revealed that the more on-court touching there was early in the season, the more successful teams and individuals were by the season's end. So
that is absolutely fascinating.
And yeah, it is. And the effect of touch was independent of salary or performance, and so this eliminated the possibility that players touch more if they're more skilled or better compensated.
Right.
So touch predicted the performance across all NBA teams.
That is absolutely fascinating, and now that you mention it,
mm-hmm.
it's not really surprising, because what touch builds is a sense of community and a sense of camaraderie.
Yes.
It creates a team. And I will give a very specific example from, what's today, Tuesday, from Sunday, 2 days ago. So I said
mm-hmm.
I'm an avid tennis player, right?
Right.
And I'm a pretty good tennis player. So I'm out playing tennis, and I'm playing doubles, and I played with this very nice guy who wasn't really happy with how he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of retired inside himself, and we didn't really communicate much as partners. It's not about, you know, I'll take the lob, you take the lob. It was more like reinforcing
mm-hmm.
and encouraging each other
mm-hmm.
to do well. I didn't get any, and I got a little paranoid. Like, gee, does he think I'm playing badly? Is he not having fun? I had got it sort of off in my head in a non-meditative way about, was he this way because I was being a bad partner in some way? So
mm-hmm.
we played, and we did pretty well, and then we switched partners. So he went over to the other side, and person B came and played with me. And we did, every time one of us had a good point, we did a little fist bump.
Ah, good, see? Yeah.
And we did, and I played 20% better.
Well,
because
there you go.
Because I was
go.
Getting reinforced
see, you played
by
it
the,
out.
Not just the touch, but by the acknowledgement that culminated in touch. And the kind of support and reinforcement that touch provided to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing.
It is the same thing. Absolutely is the
yep.
same thing.
Yep. Yep.
Now, there is a psychiatrist at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles named Mark Rapoport. And he used to wonder why his wife treated herself to so many massages.
Say that once more. I didn't hear that.
His wife, he wondered why, so Dr. Rapoport, MD, wondered why his wife treated herself to so many massages. And he said, oh, she gets tons of them, whereas I'd had maybe 10 in my entire life. And he is the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences at Cedars-Sinai. And did you know that massage is a $1 billion industry in the United States? So
I didn't.
Yeah. So Rappaport's curiosity led to a study, and it was published in late 2011. And there have been some other studies beyond this, but I do know about this study. And so he looked at 53 healthy adults who received one of two types of touch treatments. So the first was Swedish massage, and that's sort of moderate pressure. And he found that people who got the Swedish massage experienced decreases in stress hormones and increases in white blood cells. And that indicated a boost in the immune system. And then the other group was had light touch. And so that treatment showed higher levels of oxytocin. And so based on the findings, Rappaport believes that massage might be effective in treating inflammatory and autoimmune conditions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did the light touch also affect white blood cell counts?
Not according to what I read about it.
It did
increase oxytocin that helped with the bonding.
And oxytocin, of course, is the hormone that it's the falling in love hormone, whether it's with your baby or
right.
your new lover. So yeah. that's why it feels so good, because you're flooded with oxytocin.
That's right.
And again, it all tracks back to touch. So, you know, when we started this, I thought I was going to be talking mostly about touch techniques, and we can still go there, but it's sort of gone in a direction which is equally important, I think, which is that touch is kind of a neglected contributor to the high quality of life, and it's massively neglected. It has therapeutic value. It has emotional value. It is just, it's kind of a national tragedy that we don't have it. And I sort of, in my own visionary kind of out there way, look at all the discord in this country. I go on Facebook and I see people shouting each other and insulting each other and shaming each other. And I look at the political process and I look at all the gun violence. I look at all the nuttiness out there. And then I ask myself this question, what if everybody touched each other for like, you know, what if we just had required non-violent touching for 20 minutes a day? What would it do? How would it change culture? And I think it might actually, it's all delusional, right? None of this is going to happen. This is a thought experiment. But I think it would make a significant difference in people's level of happiness.
Well, you've heard, I remember hearing years ago that if there were more female leaders in the world, everybody would be getting massages all the time and war would stop.
I think I might be overstating it a bit, but I take the point.
I think it is. But and if we get Hillary Clinton, I don't know. You know, I know her a little because I used to, before Bill Clinton met her, so this goes back a long time when he was a Rhodes Scholar and I happened to be in England, I dated him, and we've stayed friends, and I got to know Hillary after he met her. And she's not the most touchy-feely kind of person. She's really smart, so I don't think she'd be suggesting massages if she becomes
president.
It's
a really interesting thing because I've been caught up in the whole Bernie versus Hillary kind of conversation, and I think Hillary is a very interesting person to be potentially the first woman president because she has a lot of the assets and qualities that are typically associated with men.
That's not women.
She's not touchy-feely. She's kind of technocratic. She's a policy wonk. She's hyper-competent. And I think that I think one of the great conversations that's present in our culture right now is, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? And people are just dancing around Hillary and laying every sort of trip on her that may or may not have anything to do with her. It's a really interesting time for us to be trying to figure out gender roles and identities because everything is in transition so fast.
You articulate it very well. I don't want to go off in too far. I mean, I opened the door for it into politics because, oh, my goodness, that's another show.
Oh, my goodness is the word.
So, Maybe this would be a segue into talking a little bit about skills, because when you stimulate the pressure receptors in the skin, you lower stress hormones, and this was found by the Touch Research Institute's field, this guy named Field. And at the same time, warm touch stimulates, again, we're back to oxytocin, the release of the cuddle chemical oxytocin, which enhances a sense of trust and attachment. So just stimulating the pressure receptors in the skin can lower stress hormones. Isn't that interesting?
It really is.
Yeah. So, you know, going back to the NBA, post-rebound slap on the back, or
right.
The brush of a hand while delivering a bill
right.
can help us all get along a little bit better.
You know, Sherry and I, as you know, Sherry has been a sex educator for 15 years now.
Yes.
And I have been working with her for about the last 7 or 8. And we have a kind of a crazy small business life. And
yes.
So we're working together, we're life partners, we're business partners, and we've got this challenge, which is that we have totally opposite circadian rhythms.
Mm.
So I'm up at 6 every morning, and I'm asleep at 10 every night. She's asleep at 1 every morning and wakes up at 11 or 10, between 10 and 12.
By that time,
my day is underway.
You're the lark.
Exactly. I'm the lark. She's the owl. And so we're kind of often like strangers passing the night, because by the time she gets going, my day's half over, and we have a million business things to talk about, and so on and so forth. So this is all a shaggy dog story to make this point. When we try very hard to carve out 10 or 15 minutes to just cuddle when she gets up. Sometimes it doesn't work. I have appointments. But I can tell you with certainty that on the days when we cuddle, we have more fun together and feel more connected. It's just like a law. And because I'm the son of a Jewish intellectual, I want to get in bed and start telling her about all the ideas I had. She basically wants me to shut up and touch her. And so we have this sort of like relationship dance then, too. It's really hard for me to shut up and touch, and it's really hard when she's barely awake to actually listen. So we sort of have to negotiate it, but I know with certainty that touch, and when she's just waking up, it's not going to be sexual touch. It might be sexy touch, but it's not going to be sexual touch. It just makes for a different quality of day.
Oh, I'm so glad you shared that. It's a personal story, but it illustrates so many aspects. And one of the hardest things is when people are really different, the owl and the lark, and how.
Yep.
And also, this actually brings up another point, and that is putting sex on the calendar. You almost have to do it. Especially when you have different circadian rhythms.
It's really hard, and you really have to, especially when you've been together for a long time.
Yeah.
Especially when there's circadian rhythms, and especially when you're driven to do other things. I am I'm a person of ideas and a writer, and my first mission every day is to work on my book, and that's sort of like my priority, and I don't really want anything to get in the way of that. And sometimes I would rather write than have sex a lot, because writing is really a deep, deep passion for me.
Mm-hmm,
so given all this stuff, and she's got her own issues, she's got her chronological issues, she's got some health issues. So similarly, we have learned that if we're going to have a date, if we're going to have sex, we probably have to make a date. Otherwise, something will happen and it won't happen.
Mm-hmm. You can have lots of spontaneous fun.
Absolutely.
Often, I hope.
Absolutely. So it's not, and again, to the extent that we do a better job of touching each other and sort of being physically connected, which is even not the same, I almost said physically intimate, but that's a different level, even physically connected, just touching. You walk by your partner and you just touch them on the back. This is the NBA thing again, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just show them that you're there in an animal way. You know, we have three cats, and they're our teachers, and we have the two males love each other to death, and when they're in a good mood or when they're in the mood, they just come up and lick each other. It's like, hi, I think I'm going to lick you now. Right? Then it turns into play fighting, and then it turns into licking, and then it turns into, and that's how they communicate affection, and they get all kinds of oxytocin that way. And it
sure.
goes to relationships, too. Touch, and people don't touch, but it really, really matters.
So the person giving the touch, can, or say a massage even, the person giving a massage experiences as great a reduction in stress hormones as the person on the receiving end. And because studies have shown that a person giving a hug, for example, gets just as much benefit as the person being hugged. I mean, we have this circular benefit that is fabulous.
It's really,
people would avail themselves of it.
It's a great point, and it's a really important point. We tend to think of that there's a giver and a getter, and there's
yeah.
different rules for the giver and the getter. But once you sort of break open that, it's just
mm-hmm.
touch. And if mm-hmm. and you know, one of the things Sherry says when she's talking about touch, if you're the toucher rather than the touchee,
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't feel good to you, if you don't like how it feels, the person you're touching probably won't like it that much either. It's a, you know,
yeah.
it's you transmit pleasure. And so there's kind of this dance where if you're enjoying the feeling, that pleasure will transmit and create pleasure. So there are circular loops, but they're also around how you're being present to the experience. And if you're doing it, you know, Sherry tells this story, and I know you know this story. You know, Sherry has been, especially when she was a younger woman and single, she got 1,000 massages from guys who were giving her a massage so they could get in her pants. The massages were never any good. Were never any good because
right.
their intention was not implicit but palpable, and they were thinking about other body parts than they were touching at the time, and it was just not good. So it's really important to really do what you're doing for a clear reason that you're both clear about, right? It was a bad
and
massage,
also,
and it probably didn't get them laid.
Yeah, and it's just to add on, I think a true indicator of a healthy, now we're moving to long-term relationship, is not how often your partner touches you, but how often your partner touches you in response to your touch.
Yeah,
so that's
absolutely.
That's another kind of circular thing.
That's a great point, and because I think reciprocity becomes kind of a touchstone to a
mm-hmm.
really strong and vibrant long-term
mm-hmm.
relationship. If it's always one person initiates and the other person is on the receiving end, it sort of resentments can build up really easily. So it's really important to have the waters really flowing constantly around engagement, really.
That's right. As
yeah.
with many things in relationships, satisfaction is as much about what we do for our partner as about what we're getting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's a great reward to, you know, I mean,
yes.
service is fun, you know?
Yeah. We
it really is. That's the bottom line. It feels good.
It feels good. It absolutely feels good. And we're more mature. So we have a perspective that lots
true.
Of people in their 20s just don't have. And I suppose that's one reason that I get a lot of people in their 20s, well, not so many in their 20s, maybe late 20s. A lot of people in their 30s who are clients and who want to talk to a seasoned sex therapist.
Well, I think there's sort of cycles of learning and growth. And if I look back at my life, you know, when I was in my mm-hmm. early 20s, I was just trying to like keep up with the crowd and not feel like an idiot and
mm-hmm.
hopefully get laid a bit. I mean, that was kind of
right.
it, and I was trying to pick up cues from the universe however I could, but I
yeah.
never really got around to asking, who are you, Carl? Who do you want to be? What is the life well led? And how are you going to show up in the world? And that started kind of when I was in my mid-20s, and
mm-hmm.
then you start asking the real questions. So there's this kind of levels of inquiry that happen, and I think for a lot of people, they don't really start until they sort of hit their late 20s, 30s, and start going, wow, there's only one life, and I can kind of do what I want with it, and the rules that I've been told aren't necessarily worth a whole lot, so how do I do this in a good way? And that's when you start asking the real questions, and that's when you start going, maybe porn isn't the way I should learn about sex. And maybe mm-hmm. there are people who are wiser, who've just been around longer, who can really give me some guidance. So mm-hmm. those are the people who, you know, are going to be the winners in terms of leading lives that are really their own lives.
And you and Sherry are wise teachers for a lot of these people just wondering and asking these questions.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And Sherry, I would say I genuinely admire Sherry. And one reason I admire Sherry is because mm-hmm. she is what is called a big, beautiful woman. She doesn't have the shape that one associates with a hot sex teacher. Mm-hmm. And it takes courage to go out into the world and as a person with a body type that's not like the model of what it should look like mm-hmm. and teach people about something as intimate and personal as real and as sex. And so I really admire her because she's modeling something really, really special by who she is, which is it doesn't matter what shape you are, it doesn't matter what your deficits are, it doesn't matter what your liabilities are. We all have the right, we all have the capacity to love ourselves, and we all have the right to have as much pleasure as we possibly can. So kudos to Sherry for showing up.
I agree.
It's really an important message. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
The first time I heard Sherry speak was in Monterey. At the Quad meeting, and in June of, I think it was 2012, yeah. and I just was so impressed.
She's so impressed. She's got herself a pair of ovaries, that girl.
What did you say? Say again.
She has a pair of ovaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But expand on that a little bit.
Well, a pair of cojones, right?
Got a pair
of balls on it, right?
Yeah.
That's the notion, right?
Yeah, cojones.
Right? So,
definitely. Well, she's brave.
So anyway, yeah, that's, you know, aside to sing the praises of my partner. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but the sort of, to come back to the sort of larger message is that, you know, touch is just essential, and to the extent, and you know, even if you're not in a long-term relationship, if you're just dating, you know, I don't know about you, Diana, but when somebody just touches me in a way that has integrity, that they're not trying to get anything from me,
mm-hmm.
it tells me I like you and I wish you well. There's just this message in it that's just heartwarming. And so I would love to see people who, you know, not, you know, if you're on a date and you touch your partner, it's great, but if you touch your partner because you think you read a book somewhere, if you touch her six times, you're going to get in her pants a day sooner. It ain't going to work, right?
No.
But if it's doing it, but if it comes from a place of genuine affection and mm-hmm. regard and wanting to connect with another human being, it's magic. It's just magic.
It really is magic. Let's just talk a little bit about touch when there is grief or fear, because we've been talking more about touch for ecstatic moments of joy or love. But, you know, the language of touch, it's a language that we can fully express what we feel, but there are times that when somebody's in deep grief or fearful, that touch is the most comforting. A touch on the arm, a squeeze of the hand. And I remember when I was widowed, well, now it's 16 years ago, which is hard to believe, touch was very comforting because I was in deep grief after Charlie
mm-hmm.
died. And I remember a little less, but still some, when I was 14 and my father was killed by a truck. So at times of loss, though, touch can be so comforting and so necessary. Speak to that a bit?
I'll happily speak to it, although I honestly mm-hmm. don't know if I have a whole lot to add to it because I haven't really given it that mm-hmm. much thought. I do think that there's virtually nothing that's as consoling as physical touch when you are in pain and suffering. Yes. And I think that's the true for most people at most times. The one thing I would add is that depending on who you are and how you're wired, touch can also, and I think if you're an extreme introvert, touch can also be experienced as a boundary violation.
Oh, and I'm so glad you brought that up. That's right. Yeah.
And so I think I think it's one of those times where you have to ask permission, because I have one person in mind particularly, and this person is really upset. If you go to touch them, it will be agitating, not reassuring, because they are because their mode for processing suffering when they're triggered is to go into their cave and hide until they're ready to come out. So if you force your way into their cave, it's going to be they're going to put their claws out at you. So everybody's different, right? But as a general rule, I agree with you totally.
I have a client, he's Japanese, and he's been here quite a few years now, though. And even when his mother comes to visit from Japan, and maybe they haven't seen each other for a couple of years, she doesn't hug him. And he is, in fact, touch aversive. He's very touch aversive. And it's very difficult for he and his wife, and they actually want to have intercourse, want to create a baby, make a baby, but the touch is the barrier and just getting into it. And I've had maybe 5-6 sessions with them, and they're gradually making progress, but the touch aversiveness is just so difficult.
It is, and it's one of those things where we don't have time for it, but I'm really curious, is this a result of trauma? Is it just a personality formation? I don't know what causes that. I'm actually interested in what causes people to be touch averse. Maybe, I don't know, is it threatening? I don't know.
But is it cultural?
Or is it cultural? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, and I think it's a combination of things. And he happens to be an extreme introvert, so what you said about boundary violations is really true. So, but what we can agree on, Carl Frankel, is that only the language of touch can fully express what we feel. And So I'm hoping that people will listen to this show, even in its archived version, where lots of people do. They listen to the archived version. I've heard people say, they listen while they're walking or running or exercising. And but you always bring to this show so much, and I really, really appreciate you. So I'm going to ask you back, and also Sherry. I said earlier we'll get Sherry on the program as well.
Great.
And
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, because let me just end. I'm not hearing my music yet, so that means we have to go off. But I get some of the couples that I see to hold hands facing each other, knee to knee, holding hands, and making eye contact. And I say, do this outside of my office when you're having stressful moments. And it's really difficult, if not impossible, to stay mad when you're holding hands and looking directly into the other's eyes. And this promotes truth, love, care, and respect and consideration for one another. And all of that's so positive. Thank you, Carl, so much for being my guest. You bring, I just really appreciate all that you bring to this program.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure being on the show with you, Diana. So look forward
to
the
next time. Thank you again. All right, everybody. Signing off. Touch each other. Love each other. Bye-bye.
Happy feet, da da da, happy feet, oh, I love it. telefono e rai, probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore, ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?